Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This episode is brought to you by Lifetime's Robin Roberts Presents Mahalia. From executive producers Robin Roberts and Linda Berman comes the biopic of the legendary Mahalia Jackson. Grammy Award winner Danielle Brooks stars as the trailblazer whose music moved, inspired, and changed people's hearts. Critics have praised Brooks's transformative performance into the Queen of Gospel as thunderingly good. Directed by Kenny Leon and written by Bettina Jilliwa and Todd Kreidler, this Lifetime original movie continues to inspire viewers and highlights the ongoing fight for social justice. Robin Roberts presents Mahalia for your Emmy consideration in all categories. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Deadline's New Hollywood Podcast. My name is Dino Ray Ramos.
And I'm Amanda Nduka. And so for this episode, we have actress. Her name is Krista Rodriguez. And she's actually starring in the new Netflix series, Holston. It's about the fashion designer.
Yeah. And she plays
Liza Minnelli, you guys. The legend.
And also, having the conversation we had with her was so fun.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know if this is me assuming, but it's like, I like it when we talk to people from the theater world, because it feels like there's a different energy there.
Right, yeah. So she's been in so many different theater productions. I mean, I think she was part of In the Heights,
Spring Awakening. Yeah. And she was on the show Smash, for you Smash heads out there.
Right. So yeah, she's done so much work, but you guys, I think she kills it as Liza.
She does.
The show is definitely, it's on right now on Netflix if you haven't watched it.
Yeah, and the fact that she's of Latinx descent kind of is a big deal. And we talk about kind of her navigating her cultural identity,
right,
which is very interesting. I just burped. I don't know if you heard that. Sorry.
I think people will be fine. Yeah, guys, and I honestly didn't know for some reason, I never heard of Holston, but after watching the show, I'm like, I've definitely seen Holston brands somewhere, maybe in maybe I just wasn't really paying attention, but his story is really interesting.
It's interesting and it's sad, kind of.
And it's played by Ewan McGregor,
who I have a crush on. And we talk about that too.
We talk about Dino crushing on him and I guess thirsting, should we call it?
Yeah, that's fine. I'm a hoe. I'm a big hoe.
it was a really good conversation. You guys, if you haven't seen the show, it's a really good show. I recommend it.
And just like the look of it, I just kind of love the glamour of it all. It's so fun.
And I like a good period piece. Like, yeah. I love seeing how the world is depicted back in these times where we weren't alive.
Yeah. This is what it, for those of you who don't know, this is during like the Studio 54 era, where it's like caftans and just everyone was doing drugs and
partying, drugs. Hardcore, but it was fun. Without further ado, here is Krista. Krista, thank you so much again for being with us today. like Dina Kabir, very excited to have you and excited about this show, Halston.
Oh, God.
On Netflix.
Gorge.
Yes. We'll get to that a bit later. But first, we like to kind of start off asking about, you know, your background, what brought you to this industry. So for you, was there a moment in your life that you realized, I want to be a performer?
There's a lot of like small moments leading up to it, where when I was a kid, I saw Annie for the first time. I always say that Annie has been ruining lives since 1977. It's just like, you can't see Annie without being like, I want to do that, if you have any proclivity for performing at all, because there's like a girl your age and there's a dog. Yeah. And it was too much for me. So that was sort of where I knew that something I wanted to be surrounded by theater. And it wasn't until I was like 12, I was doing a dance recital at my like dance studio. And I got in the car with my mom and I was like, Mom, I just love the smell of the theater. There is no other place in the world that smells like this. And like every theater you go to has that same smell. And now I know it's mold and lead-based paint, but like at the time, it was like magic. It truly was like nowhere else you go smells like that. And it was just such a romantic thing to say at 12 years old. Like, I just want to be where that smell is. Yeah. And my mom was like, you know, people do this for their job. And I said, what? Like, well, you've been holding out on me this whole time. I'm at the ripe old age of 12. I didn't even know I could be doing this. So from that point on, it was like, I basically like kicked open the door and was like, nobody get in my way. This is what I'm going to do.
So was Annie the first Broadway play that you saw? Is that what you said?
That came to Orange County, which is where I'm from.
Oh, okay.
And then the first Broadway show was a year after that that I saw, which was Fiddler on the Roof when I was 6. And that was also a very, very poignant experience for me, because I was living in a motorhome with my parents. We were like traveling across the country, and we like rolled into New York City in a motorhome, and we wanted to go see. So we got like tickets at TKGS, and it was like, you know, 1990. So I'm wearing like, you know, denim high-waisted shorts and like a LA Gear t-shirt tied at the waist, and everyone else. Which would be,
by the way.
Right. I can't believe what the kids are wearing. I wore. But at the time, like, you got dressed up to go to the theater. So all these other girls are in their Jessica McClintock, like, you know.
Okay, Jessica McClintock.
Like, full tulle skirts and stuff. And I was like, I don't want to go in there. It's so embarrassing. And then the lights went out and I was like, oh, look, it doesn't matter what you're wearing. We're all in the dark and we're all like experiencing art together. So even at 6 years old, I was yearning for that collective experience where it didn't matter where you came from or what you looked like. And I think that's something that I still love about theater that really resonated to me at that age.
That's very much theater. Yeah, that's very much theater. I honestly, I'm very ashamed to say I've never been to a Broadway show before. So I'm—
Wait, like, you've been to a play though, right?
I've been to plays, yeah. I've been to a couple of plays out here.
But not Broadway physically.
No, I've never been to Broadway. I've never done that though. So I know it's something that I've been really wanting to do. I love stage work. I love seeing people. I think it's so fascinating that how people are able to act and art and do all this stuff like live in front of people. I always thought that was really fascinating. And
8 times a week?
Yeah, exactly. And Chrissy, you've done a whole bunch of stage stuff, Broadway stuff, Bye Bye Birdie, The Addams Family, Spring Awakening. So you're very much a stage performer, but then obviously you've done a lot of TV and film things. So how has it been, what was it like for you transitioning from being on stage to doing TV?
So I grew up in Southern California, which is very LA, you know, very close to LA, very, very TV focused, very Disney Channel. Everyone wanted to be Lindsay Lohan when I was growing up. So while I loved theater and was very enamored by it and was doing children's theater, and I went to an arts high school where I was doing a lot of theater, the sort of in the back of your mind goal was to do that TV, that LA thing. And to be quite honest with you, I found it to be inhospitable for being a person of color in the industry at that time, especially. Mm. Now there is much more push to want to open up those roles for people, but I'm white passing and I have a Hispanic last name in a in an area that is in, mm-hmm. that is primarily Mexican and I'm not Mexican. So it was very confusing to people where I would go. And I encountered that really hard right away at 15 through 17, just sort of not knowing what to do with me. And then when I decided to go to college, mm-hmm. I had applied to a couple places and I applied to NYU and UCLA. And I got into UCLA first and it was like, well, this is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna live in LA, I'm gonna do TV. And then I got the letter that I got into NYU. And, you know, my parents are like, but you wanna stay in Orange County, right? Like you wanna be in like LA, like you wanna be close to home, yeah? Yeah.
Orange County or New York.
And they were like, well, you know, we can't afford for you to go to NYU. And then I got some scholarships. So it was just sort of this, like, all these doors were opening to go to New York.
It was meant.
And so when I made it to New York, theater, it's such an equalizer. At that time, was so much more accepting of the me that I was. It was like, I was playing German characters and I was playing Hispanic characters and I was playing Jewish characters and I was playing characters that it didn't matter what their race or ethnicity was. You know, I just felt home in a place where people were more open to that, open to seeing what we could do as actors, because it was more about the work. And so I spent years telling my agents, I don't want to audition for movies or TV. I was so burnt out on that. I didn't want to do any of it. And it was a few years later, maybe about 10 years of me doing Broadway show after Broadway show and sort of, you know, at age 24 at that point, almost 25, 26, like not being able to get out of bed without some pains here and there. And I thought, you know, they get 2 days off a week. You know, like you said, we do 8 shows a week. We get 1 day off. It's exhausting and you put everything into it. And I thought, let me just try my hand at TV again. And the industry had changed a lot by that point. And as soon as I decided I wanted to try it, some doors started opening for me, which isn't always the case. And I feel really lucky about that. And my first TV show that I got was Gossip Girl. Right. And I got to do like a stint on that. And I got to make out with Chase Crawford, which was like a big deal for me. And the day after it aired, I was walking down the street and I heard these like footsteps come running up and I turned, you know, you're in New York City and something's running up behind you. You're not that comfortable with it. And it was this older grandmother with her daughter. And they're like, we saw you on Gossip Girl. Oh my God, what was it like to make out with Chase Crawford? And I realized, like, as much as I love theater, more people had seen me in that one episode of Gossip Girl than had ever seen me in 7 Broadway shows at that point. And it's not always about the visibility, but it is about making inroads in places that make your options open. So, and I started really liking the work on television, and the industry started to kind of accept, you know, not binary versions of who people had to be. It's not perfect by any means, but it became easier for people to want to cast me. And so that transition became, it became really good for my, well, it became good for my stamina and good for my soul, because some amazing work is happening on television and streaming and movies, and some amazing work's happening on theater. And it's allowed me to be able to just look at the roles. It doesn't have to be like, I can only do theater, or I need a theater piece, or I need a movie. I can really just, and if the great role is on a narrative podcast, I'll do that. If the great role is, you know, in an indie movie where you get paid pennies, I'll do that. So I've really started to allow myself to just go where the roles are.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, so it's like the art is the art, but it's the same. The art stays the same, but the medium changes, that kind of thing. Yeah. Well, speaking to that, you mentioned Annie and all that, but when did you first feel seen in media, TV, or film?
You know, it really wasn't until I did In the Heights on Broadway. And I was nervous because, again, I thought, oh, I'm not culturally immersed in where I'm from. I was raised very, 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 very Orange County, not anything else. And I thought, oh, they're gonna think I nicknamed myself Fraudriguez, and like they're gonna think I'm, you know, not immersed in this experience. And they actually, the whole cast there, were the people who welcomed me the most of any group that I had known. Who, you know, I had never. We were doing seders at the show because half of the cast is half Jewish, half Venezuelan, half Jewish, half Cuban. These people have a breadth of experience that isn't just solely from where they were born. They are a patchwork themselves.
Yeah.
And I think it wasn't until I was with other people who knew what it was like to be a patchwork that I felt comfortable with who I was. And so representation mattered to so many people in that show. I knew a lot of girls who were loving their long curly hair that never loved their curly hair before because they were seeing so many beautiful Puerto Rican girls with these like gorgeous manes, you know, and like, and the music, and to enamor, to like surround yourself in that culture, and the dancing, and the family, and the roots that all of that has. Yeah. People were seeing themselves represented. And what was funny is that I was finally seeing myself represented in the way that it wasn't just a singular thing. And I really am really grateful for that experience.
Yeah.
For that.
Yeah, I like how you mentioned that when you, it's so weird when you enter a space with people who share your culture. I honestly, like, you get a little bit more nervous, you know, especially if they're strangers. Like I remember when I first moved to LA and I was like, I'm going to go to all these, you know, Hollywood Asian events. Mm-hmm. And I felt so out of place. Like it's weird, but you know, now I'm like more involved, but it's also just kind of this like,
sure.
You know, you're the new kid in school. And you just, yeah, but also you're like, oh, do I belong here? But you know, I've always questioned that, you know, you're like, oh, do I know enough about being Filipino to actually voice being Filipino? And it's like, oh, do I have that right? You know, that's just a whole other conversation. but you know, you've played, like you said, you've played so many people on stage, you know, Wednesday Adams. And of course, I'm not gonna, we can't talk about your career without mentioning Smash.
Yes.
and you know, you were in Daybreak, and you know, and now you're on Halston. You have such a, you know, a diverse resume. And a lot of it's not race specific, but you know, do you mind like asking what is your, you know,
well, there is some makeup? There's some question marks, but there is. It is, my grandmother is Spanish, and she is also. There's some other things in there that are undefined, but there's a general Hispanic culture that I was raised under, and then my mother is white and English and Irish, and my grandmother was a redhead, blue-eyed, completely Hispanic woman, entire full, and so she was able to integrate into the world. She worked in a factory with other Spanish-speaking people, and she never spoke Spanish. She didn't want them to know she could hear what they were saying about her, and she never taught her children Spanish. And so we're a bunch of sort of, you know, new.
But it's like you are from this, you have this heritage like kind of embedded in
Spanish. Well, it's in my name, and what's great about, like, and, you know, one of the reasons that being who I am was complicated in Southern California was because, like, I was being seen to play Anne Frank, or I was being seen to play, the big one was, what's her name? Marie Osmond. There was like a movie about the Osmonds. And I was told at my callback, don't come to the final audition until you've changed your name, because there wouldn't be a Rodriguez who would be playing Marie Osmond. Now here I get to play one of the most recognizable women in the world, Liza Minnelli, who is not, you know, she's Italian, and among many other things.
Yeah.
And nobody's batting an eye about it, which is a relief, you know, because I did change my name, and I thought that's what I needed to do. And the first time I saw my name, not what my name was, I thought this isn't worth it. It's not worth it to me to try to calibrate who I am. It's only worth it for me to just say, I don't know all of what I am. And you got to take that or leave that, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I think that's what kind of struck me is when, you know, they announced your casting for Liza Minnelli. I was all, oh, Rodriguez, a Latina playing Liza Minnelli, and I was all, that's progress. No, it was just like so striking. So like when I was like, oh, we should have her on, and like of course we watched. Well, I only watched one episode, the first one so far. I was just like, oh, yeah. And I love that era, and I have this, I used to work in fashion, so I love Halston, and like his story is so like interesting. But yeah, I was just like, oh, this is kind of cool. Chris is playing Liza, cool. Like an icon. And yeah. No pressure.
Krista, can you tell us about how this role came to you?
I was doing a play and off Broadway, and I had just come off Daybreak and, you know, was looking kind of for what the next thing was. And I got this audition, and, you know, when you get an email from your agents, and it's basically like, it tells you the name of it. And then you go in, it says who's doing it, who's producing it, what network it's on, blah, blah, blah. So I see Halston, and I already love Halston. I'm like, oh, that's cool. What a great idea to make a story out of him. Then the next line is Netflix. Love Netflix. You know, that's like, you're gonna obviously want to be on whatever Netflix has. And then the next line is Ryan Murphy producing. And okay. I'm like, you know, now the antennas are going up. Like, this is the sexy project. And then it's Ewan McGregor is playing Halston. And I'm like, oh my God, what is this going to be? And then it says, like, you are being asked to audition for the role of Liza Minnelli. And I'm telling you, like, my heart just started pounding, and like vomit came up into the back of my mouth. And I was like, oh God, oh God, oh God. Because and I say this, like, the worst thing that can happen to you as an actor is that you want a role. It's like, you have to go on auditions all the time thinking like, I don't care. This could be great. It could be not. Maybe this show's going to suck. Maybe it won't. Or who knows what this role is going to be. And all of a sudden, it's so clear in writing that this is your dream. And you're like, it's either never going to happen or it's mine to lose. And that's such a scary position to be in, because you're like, I know I could do this. What makes you think you could ever do this? It's like, I this is mine, and I'm never gonna get it. Like, Anne Hathaway's gonna be great in this. Like, that's what you think, and you go, okay. So the pressure is somewhat off, although the pressure is also majorly on, because of course you want it, but the pressure's sort of off, because you're like, there's no way it's gonna be me. And so all I could really do, and I've had the best successes that I've had in my career have been when the pressure is off to get the part, and all I do is care about doing the person justice. And I cared so much about doing her justice from the beginning, from the moment her name was on that paper, that I just thought, regardless, I'll go in and share a bit of what I love about this woman with people. And so I went in, and I sort of did a couple things, like I did a little eyeliner, put some lashes on, and had a little outfit on, but nothing too crazy. And I was in the waiting room, and some girl walked out from her audition, and she stopped and like covered her face. And she's like, please tell me you're going in for Liza Minnelli. And I was like, yeah, I am. She's like, you're good. You got it. And I was like, okay.
Oh my God.
And then I went into the room, and the casting director was like, wow, well, you don't look like her at all, do you? And I was like, yes, I do. I didn't know that I did. I didn't know there was a resemblance there. And then the more I went in, the more I loved the piece. And all of a sudden, one day, I was the only person they were seeing. And then the next day, I had it. Yeah.
Oh, God.
How exciting.
Yeah, especially like for an icon like that, and for an icon that many people do a caricature of, you know what I mean? Because she has all these Minnelli-isms, I guess you'd say. I mean, like, how many times has she been like
in
the Snatch Game and Drag Race? I don't know, but.
Yes, I mean, so many people who lovingly pay homage to her, and like, and she herself has, when you've been in the industry for as long as she has, you reinvent and you invent and you copy yourself. I mean, she, which was what was such a fun thing to go back to the source and see where she started. And that's where I got kind of live in, which I'm grateful for. I just love her. She's just the best.
That's so cool. Yeah. I love me a good period drama. Like,
especially this period, and everyone is so fabulous. So it's like ridiculous.
And I just like learning about these people. Like, I didn't really know about Halston until the show was announced, and I was just doing reading for it. But just seeing, you know, sort of his contribution to the fashion industry, it's just so fascinating, and all the relationships that he had. I mean, it sounds like you're obviously familiar with Liza Minnelli, but were you familiar with Halston and his work?
I knew Halston as a designer. I knew that he existed. I knew his style. I knew like what his signature kind of pieces were. I didn't know his story, and I didn't know the whole through line of where he began. And what is fascinating about this, and what I'm so excited for people to see, and is that he was really the first, he was the first influencer, and he was the first cautionary tale of influencing. The fact that he was fashion, we're not talking about he was a designer, he was fashion. He was the godfather of American fashion. It didn't really even exist before him. Mm-hmm. The fact that people now, 30 years after his death, don't even know who he is a wild thing to know. So what makes somebody burn up so hard and bright and then fade so quickly? It's this tale of doing whatever you could to brand yourself in any way possible. And when that goes too far, and he sold his name, and he couldn't, he had no control over his artistry anymore, and then he died. And so it was like, it's very fascinating to watch this story. You see these a lot. Anybody who's ever successful has had some tumultuous ride there, and maybe there's a big fall at the end. But to see the way that it came about, of him being so on the forefront of putting his name on everything and being everywhere at all times is fascinating.
He wanted to put Halston everything from your panties to your bra. I
mean, my favorite anecdote is that he did an airline. He like designed a whole airline. The leather seats, the flight attendant outfits, the plates and things that you use to eat on was all Halston.
I would take Halston everywhere. Airlines any day. Over Southwest.
Yeah.
Move over Southwest.
was him. And it's like, so I've been so inspired. And, you know, I always thought like the 70s was like avocado refrigerators and orange shark carpets and stuff. And so now that I've been immersed in it, I'm like, this is gorgeous. What a time that was, like, post-liberation, pre-destruction. And it was people living at their absolute fullest, and it was throwing anything to the wall and seeing what stuck. And that there wasn't a time like that up until that point. And so that means some of it's bad, but a lot of it's really good, you know?
And I do feel like we're kind of almost entering that kind of era right now.
I was gonna ask you, do you see, just because you were able to immerse yourself in this world, do you see a lot of parallels that are
still happening today? We started filming pre-COVID, and then we shut down for 6 months. To come back to the show, we'd filmed one episode. So to come back to the show now in this era was really wild. Like, New York is in bankruptcy, economic downturn. Our president is, I don't even know what else to say. I'm barely thinking the guy. Isn't it amazing?
He's just not.
Yeah, he's
not the current one, but the other one.
Yeah, the previous one.
Hallelujah. But that, like, that the person in charge is corrupt and not working in the best interest of the country, that art is needing to come out of the most inhospitable places, that there's a virus raging that is indiscriminately killing people at every turn.
Yeah.
And the fear of wanting to live and the desire to live as authentically as you are at the same time, and and what is preventing you from acting your full self. I mean, so much of it was the same. And I read all these things about, you know, I've lived in New York for almost 20 years, and New York has only become safer since I've lived here. I mean, it really only has like the, it's become more hospitable for people to live, but it's not a guarantee. That is not, that's something we take for granted, that I take for granted, that I don't feel unsafe every time I go outside of my house, that there isn't, you know, the subways were covered in graffiti, covered, you know, and like, you didn't take the subway pass a certain time, and you didn't even step foot in Central Park during the day. I mean, those sorts of things are stuff that we don't even understand as that we've lived here, but the people were still moving here in droves and coming here for their dreams to come true. And I think that's such a testament to what New York is. And New York is such a huge part of Halston's life, Liza's life, Studio 54, and now this new era of where we're going with New York now.
This episode is brought to you by Lifetime's Robin Roberts Presents Mahalia. From executive producers Robin Roberts and Linda Berman comes the biopic of the legendary Mahalia Jackson. Grammy Award winner Daniel Brooks stars as the trailblazer whose music moved, inspired, and changed people's hearts. Critics have praised Brooks's transformative performance into the Queen of Gospel as thunderingly good. Directed by Kenny Leon and written by Bettina Jilloa and Todd Kreidler, this Lifetime original movie continues to inspire viewers and highlights the ongoing fight for social justice. Robin Roberts Presents Mahalia for your Emmy consideration in all categories.
I just think just Halston defined an era. Like anything like people wore to Studio 54, there is a look that he had.
And I think even before that, he designed the pillbox hat for Jackie O. Like the most restrictive, the most structured piece that you could have, he then became this, you know, flowing. He celebrated women's bodies in a way that everyone was molding their bodies at that point with pointy foundation wear and garments and girdles and nylons, and all of that's gone all of a sudden. And it's simply about the drape of the piece and how to accentuate everybody's body.
You know? Gorgeous. Like I'm like enamored with him, and just, I mean, I don't know if you watched there was also that Halston documentary, which is like fucking amazing. And just what he did.
I know.
Like, it gives me chills.
I always imagine what would have been like to like live back in the day, like back then. Like that's why I love period pieces so much. Yeah. I always like imagine myself like.
Yeah, me too.
It wouldn't be the best.
I'm like, oh, if I was Joel Schumacher, what would I do? because he gave it to Joel, like a lot. Like, in the first episode at least. And I'm just like, who he associated himself with. And I love how Ewan plays him. It's you know, I'm not going to lie. A lot of people are talking about, you know, it should be a gay actor or whatever. But it's interesting to see what he brings to the table for Halston. You're not gonna be please everyone, guys.
I don't disagree with that either, but I do know that Ewan is phenomenal in it. And
how could you not love Ewan? Like,
and I know
I've been crushing on
him. The
care
that he took for this role was meticulous, and the input that he got from people and the interviews that he conducted himself of it. And frankly, I think that one of the problematic things about having people play other things is that they don't understand the experience, and they're maybe nervous about what they look like, but we don't shy away from anything that Halston was. Ewan didn't stop from doing anything. He is in every, you know, we show the drug use, we show the sex work, we show all of the things that, you know, if the worry is that those won't be told authentically, I hope that that is assuaged because we.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, like I said, it's gorgeous to just watch what is happening on that screen. And like, I remember like just seeing, when you first are introduced as Liza and you're on that stage, what's the name of that number? Which is a very, that's a very difficult.
It's a pattern song.
Like chatty. But when I was watching it and I was like preparing for you to come on, I was just like, oh, okay. I was like, oh, she might do like just an impression. But I saw Liza in it, but in the same time, I'm like, oh, you bought something to Liza, you know, that wasn't just like, Liza, that kind of thing. Because you could easily fall into that, like, you know, kind of caricature. And I appreciated what, you know, and then like the chemistry between you and Ewan, you know, it's just like, again, if you see him, say, Dino has been crushing on you since train spotting.
Just the holiday.
It's so funny. I shouldn't even say this, but like, you know, when we look like we do in the show, there's you know we're not like we're characters, and now suddenly we've been doing all this press, and I'm like, he's not hot for me. Every day I went to work with Austin, and now I'm seeing Ewan again. And I'm like, oh, nice.
I remember, like one time, I think was like a series of sexual awakenings. There was this one time I saw him on an MTV like movie or music awards, I'm not sure what, but he came out like looking all, he had this sleeveless tee, his hair was all done up, and he had like, he looked really punk. He, and I was all, okay, let's do this.
He's a very, you know, Obi-Wan.
Come on, Obi-Wan.
Yeah, I'm like, he sings. He and I would sing musicals together. Oh yeah,
he sings. Oh, that's right, he sings. Moulin Rouge.
And we used to like sing Suddenly Seymour from Little Shop of Horrors together.
That song. Yeah. Oh my God, I love that song. I don't know if you've seen that one video of who was it? It was Ariana Grande and what's his name? The guy What's his name? I always forget his name. Yeah, they're in a car singing Suddenly Seymour.
I bet.
And
I mean,
Ariana kills it, of course.
That voice.
and I also saw a production of that.
Yes, with MJ,
MJ Rodriguez.
And George Salazar, and I wish I could have seen it, but I bet it was.
And Amber Ryan plays the plant, or Audrey. Oh my God. Anyways, but you know, playing, like, now that, you know, you've played, you know, you've gone through playing Liza, and, you know, in your cultural background, your history of, you know, just being an actress and knowing who Liza is, knowing who Halston is, what kind of have you learned about yourself and what have you taken away as a performer? And even as an actor,
I have a mentor and friend of mine, Susan Egan, who's a big Broadway performer, and also she's done a million Disney things. She was the voice of Meg in Hercules, and
okay, oh my God, Meg, underrated
musical,
underrated.
But also everybody loves. She's not a princess. She's a goddess.
Yeah. Goddess, there you go.
Anyway, she once talked to me. Yes. I was going through it. I was in a Broadway show, and I was having some like vocal problems, and she took me out to lunch, and she was talking me through things, and she said that you know, you encounter the roles in the time in your life when you need to learn something from them, and so think about what you need to learn from this woman. And that has really stuck with me all these years, and I try then. If I can't understand it while I'm in it, at least after the fact, think about what have I learned from this woman. And the greatest gift that Liza gave me before I played her, and that I got to embody, and what I don't think I could put my finger on as a young performer when I first saw her, is that she is not hung up on perfection. She's not hung up on placing things where they need to go. She has wild abandon. She is completely connected to all her chakras, but most specifically that lower one that like women of that time were not connected to. If you were connected to that, you were sort of seen as a threat in the world. You were maybe looked at as a, you know, a tramp or a whore. She was somehow able to be like, I am gonna live in this like groinal area of my life and still be America's sweetheart. And the kind of, in a subversive way, not be, you know, a typical ladylike woman. And when you watch her in her numbers, she's flinging her hair back, she's sweaty, she's like, it's almost, and I say this in the best term, grotesque. It's like, it's almost so unappealing to look out that it's gorgeous. And I was drawn to that as a kid. I didn't know what I was looking at. And now that I am a woman myself, and I see how complicated it is to exist as a woman and to exist in connection with your body and your female parts, and to like know that you're supposed to love them but hide them, but be in service of men, but also be a strong woman, but also not show too much, and all, you know, there's so much calibrating that happens between just existing as a woman, that she subverted that. She thwarted that whole thing, and we didn't even fucking know it. Excuse my language, but like, and so, and so I am like so thrilled to enter into this new phase of life where I got to live in that body, in that movement for as long as I did, and just, you know, just take on the world after that.
Yeah, I love how you say that, because like we see that with a lot of female performers, you know, we see like seeing them sweat is like also like, oh, you're human. Like we see like I remember Whitney performing the Star Spangled Banner, the Super Bowl, she was like drenched in sweat, but she killed it. And then like Aretha, you see Janet, you know, Janet Jackson, she's a rock star.
They're at work. It's like this is their job, and they're working. And like, let's applaud the work. And
it's like, you can't be perfect. Yeah, you can't be perfect. Well, have you met Liza? Are you nervous for her to see you?
Yes. So my only encounter, true encounter with Liza was when she saw me in Spring Awakening. She saw Spring Awakening 100 years ago now, 2006. And she was really kind and met us all afterwards. So that's my actual, like, shook her hand, looked her in the eye encounter with Liza. I did not reach out to her while I was doing this job. Ewan did, and Ewan got to spend some time with her. He was, he felt it was really important for him to be able to do that, to tell her that her best friend was in good hands. I felt like I didn't want to have to give her the pressure of giving some blessing of any kind. I didn't want to make her have to feel in support of anything. Like, I can't imagine how complicated that must be to watch yourself be portrayed over and over and over again. And it's never going to be what you know happened to you. It just isn't. So. So I didn't want to put that, put either of us in that position. But I do, you know, I hope if she watches it, I give her full rein to not watch it. And not that she needs my permission, but just, you know, like, yeah, it's okay. I'm not basing anything on whether or not she sees it. But I hope that if she would at least see how much care we took with her friend, herself, her story. And that all of this is out of a complete fangirl and enamored love that I have for her. And I hope, if nothing else, that would come across.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I hope, I mean, I don't know Liza. Of course I don't,
what is Liza?
but based on your performance, I mean, I hope she enjoys. And like, I think it is an interesting thing to play someone who's still living and who's like walking around and performing still.
Yeah, she just had
she's okay. I was like, I was gonna gonna ask she if she's is a still little bit. I mean, she's
you know older on in years. She just had a big birthday, and she'll put some story Instagram stories and stuff up of her singing and stuff. But I haven't seen anything about her actually doing a performance. But of course, none of us have done anything in the last.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I just like even just seeing her in Arrested Development is just like,
oh my gosh, yes.
Because it's like, okay, she kind of has, she has a sense of humor. She knows what this industry is about. I love her. I mean, you
she's know, a true like, actress. She is a true, like her stuff in her early years, she was just one of the best actresses. And, you know, and now what she's able to rest on is that people take what she does and keeps it going. And
and it's going to live on. She's person. Her work is definitely going to live on. And I'm excited to see what else you have to bring. Like if it was the first episode, I think you killed it. So I'm excited to see the rest and see what you have to bring to this role. The show premieres May 14th, I believe.
Oh my God, soon.
So what's next for you? What can you tell us? And or if you don't have anything you can tell us, is there anything that you haven't done, like a role or project that you haven't tackled yet that you're really
a couple things. So right now, as far as what's next, a total pivot, a complete 180. I started an interior design business that was born out of it was born out of kind of COVID. I've always been designing, and my mom does real estate, and she restores houses and does home renovations, and I've always been the designer for the family. And when COVID happened, I thought, you know, this is an opportunity to, when have we ever gotten a chance to like stop the one ride and see what the other ride could do? So throughout COVID, I was designing houses. I did some renovations, and today actually the business launched. So it's called Curated by Krista Rodriguez. Yes. You can go find me on Instagram at curated.by.kr.
Let me see.
Right now, we just came out. The apartment came out in New York. My apartment here in New York came out in the New York Times today. So there's some really fun stuff happening there. I designed my house in the vein of Boston and Liza.
Oh my God.
So I did it sort of as a loving homage to them.
Oh, come on, Instagram.
That's a house I did in California. This is, and then I have my house here. And yeah, I walked onto set after we came back from COVID and I saw Halston's set, hot house. And I was like, this is so in right now. Like it was, it's all white and lush and there's travertine coffee tables and postmodern lamps. And I was like, I totally get this. I totally see where he is now and I can modernize this. So I spent a few weeks doing my house. And so that's where I'm launching with that. So that's really exciting. And we're just adding it.
Oh my God.
That is so cool.
You need your own like
HGTV show.
I don't know. HGTV
Maybe
show.
Maybe one day. I don't know that I want people to see me in a reality show setting. I don't know what I could pass. I don't know. Those people who, you know, but who can Yeah.
Krista makes over your house.
And I would love to surprise people. I don't want anyone else's opinion. I just want to go and fix their house, you know?
Yeah.
I don't care.
You don't like this? I don't care. Yeah. This is what we're going to do.
My house is so fun. But yeah, so I'm ready to take on some clients and kind of treat it like I do, like I said earlier on. It's just another one of the jobs. And if that comes in and that inspires me, that role of being designer for that house inspires me, I'll do that. So that's exciting. As far as things that I have yet to do, I have been shouting from the rooftops for decades now that I want to play Sally Bowles in Cabaret, which made famous by Liza Minnelli. Yes.
By Liza Minnelli.
So even before I was Liza, I've been wanting to do Sally Bowles. So I always tell people, write your congressman, call in, write it in, write in campaign for Chris Rodriguez as Sally Bowles. And in fact, when I announced that I was doing Liza, my caption on Instagram was, still has not played Sally Bowles.
God. Yeah, I could so see that,
it's
though.
Like a
I could see
even
that.
Of course, now. Liza,
you're
right. So now I have to do it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just like, this is like
yeah.
One step closer to being America's Next Top Model, you know? I mean, but this, I could see it. I could see it. And I regret never, I've never seen Cabaret on Broadway or a play. I always wanted to see when Alan Cumming was when he was MC.
I saw it.
Yeah.
In fact, Susan Egan, who I just talked about, she played Sally Bowles in the revival, 20 years ago. And that's the first time I saw it on Broadway was like blown away. And that started my journey into wanting to play it. And I think I've perfectly aged into it now. It's time. It's the right time. Yeah.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
We'll make it happen.
Yes. Right. Okay, so we'd like to wrap up our interview session with the segment we call the facts or the FAQs, just random fun questions. So your first question is, so in high school, and we all had one, everybody has a clique, right? Were you the jock, the band geek, the theater nerd, or the social butterfly?
Well, obviously the theater nerd. I went to an arts high school. So the theater nerd was basically theater nerd / jock, because we were the popular kids, because that's who everyone was. We had no sports. So I was a little bit of both.
I was not good at sports.
Oh my gosh. I was totally the band and choir geek. Like I was. I was in drumline though, which gave me a pass because
I never played an instrument. So I was never able to do band stuff. And I was like, just the theater kid, and I just found where the theater kids are popular. But I used to play sports in middle school and I was terrible at it, and I was like, I was missing practice to go to ballet class, and that's where I was like, you know, why don't I do something I'm really good at instead of trying to do this thing I'm clearly not. So
I remember I sang tenor one. So I was like, I know, I don't know if I could do that anymore. I was terrible. Like, so as a performer, you know, do you have any weird or offbeat rituals you do before you start a new series, or even before you go on stage to perform?
I used to. My sort of claim to fame in Broadway was that I could eat fried chicken before every performance. Most singers, they have these like, you know, I have to steam and I can't eat any milk before and like blah, blah, blah. And I found early on that the superstition made me more stressed out than the actual food itself. And that being happier and being like free of all of that made it easier to perform. So I made a very conscious effort to just eat whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. And it was always, it's like, ask anyone I've done a show with. They're always like, I was 100 pounds soaking wet. And I'm like, just like downing Church's chicken before every performance. Nowadays, I'm in my mid to upper 30s. It's a little harder, and I don't do that. But I do insist on taking a nap between shows. I have to have a nap between shows. That is like, no matter what theater I'm in, I have to find a space where every day I can take that nap.
Just take a nap. Oh my God, the fried chicken, or just eating. eating before a performance, because I remember like they would say, make sure you don't drink anything dairy or blah, 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 before you sing.
And like, of course those are real for a lot of people, but I just was like, I want to fight this demon that might open.
Okay, if we asked your closest friends and family what your worst habit is, what would it be, or what would they say?
I have a lot. I think my worst habit would be my need to be in control. Like, I need to be right. That really bumps a lot of people. But they love me anyway, thank God. And I twirl my hair. I've twirled my hair since I was 5 years old. My dad is always trying to get me to stop, and I'm like, it makes me happy, stop it. So it's like my nervous habit, I just twirl my hair.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have been given an elephant. You can't get rid of it. What do you do with it?
Wow. Okay.
I mean, Yeah, you're in New York. You have to.
Yeah, I think that would just give me the great excuse to like move to the middle of nowhere and live out my life with my elephant. And like, I was like, look, I had to go live. I don't know where the best place is for elephants to live. So I would find the best, most hospitable elephant sanctuary place and go get a tiny house and live on there with my elephant. Okay. Yeah.
Oh my God, I could picture that. You know, you're nicely decorated.
My well-appointed house in the country. Home with my elephant.
You're the elephant just roaming in the backyard, yeah. I guess.
That could happen. I can see that.
I could see that. I could see that.
Somewhere here.
It will happen for you, just like Sally Bowles.
Okay. This is a would you rather question. Would you rather snitch on your best friend for a crime they committed or go to jail for said crime they committed? So basically, yeah, basically, are you a snitch?
What's so funny is that when you first asked the first part of that, I immediately was like, no, never that. I would never snitch on a friend. And you're like, or you go to jail. I was like, no. Yeah.
This one's a hard one.
That's a, oh, I would definitely, I'm not going to jail for anybody.
I'm not going to jail for anybody. Sorry. No. If it was the thing that I committed, I'd go to jail. But I'm not going to jail for you. You own up. You go to jail. Don't make me snitch on you. Confess yourself.
Thinking of this scenario now, it's like you think, you're like, if your friend is not holding himself or herself accountable,
that's not on me.
Then that's not your friend.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, good. I'm glad to support you in saying that.
But it's good.
Yeah, I would just be all, yep, she did it. Sorry.
Yeah, interrogation room. Yeah, it was her.
No. It's like, oh, we don't have time to waste.
Send her off.
Okay. Our final question is there an underrepresented voice in the industry, whether it is an actor, writer, producer, or creator that is not in the mainstream that you think people need to know about and deserves more recognition from?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the list goes on and on, but personally, I've been affected by a few years ago, I was able to do Spring Awakening again in the revival, the Deaf West revival, which is was a new version that incorporated deaf and hearing actors. And I was really given an insight into what they face as actors, not just as people who are deaf and what they wouldn't even consider a disability. They have pride in their deafness. They have a culture all their own. It's something that hearing people want to put on them as an affliction, but in fact, they're quite proud of that. And how inaccessible the world is to deaf people and how inaccessible the business is. And on top of that, I was in that show, I was working with one of my best friends, Ali Stroker, who is in a wheelchair. And another sort of realization about, you know, the Broadway theaters are not accessible. She won a Tony for Oklahoma and she didn't even have a way in the theater. They had to carry her downstairs to get her into the theater and like bring her in the back with the, you know, just like all these rigmarole that has to go around. And I got to share a dressing with her. And fortunately our producers paid to have the dressing room retrofitted so that it was wheelchair accessible. But you imagine this woman has won a Tony and Marley Matlin, the deaf actress, has won an Oscar. These are some success stories and they're going through all of this. So imagine what this is every day, what you have to do to even get to that level at that point. So I'm really passionate about deaf actors playing deaf roles and getting captioning in any way that you can and for that, because these actors that I worked with in Spring Awakening are I'm not saying some of the best actors I've ever worked with, and it has nothing to do with whether they can hear or not. And so I am really passionate about raising that awareness for them and supporting them whenever they can. And in fact, Sandra May Frank, who's leading Spring Awakening, was also in Daybreak with me, and get to watch her work on television and run the room and say, this is what I need. This is who I need, this interpreter. I want to be able to say this line. I think the interpretation of this should be this. I mean, these people have to do the work of 10 people by themselves. And so if any of that could be alleviated, and or if their voices could be heard exactly as they needed to be, that would really open a lot of doors for people. So
yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah, thank
Krista,
you.
Thank you so much for being
Yes, here. Krista, thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. There's more to do. I have more songs and dances. So check it out.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.